Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinton.
Margaret, I should not have been surprised that the day after our show with Jenny Chin Hansen, president of AARP, I received another AARP invitation to join up. They really want me to join. Do you think it was the interview?
No, I think you really qualify for membership, and I'm hoping you'll take them up on it. But seriously, AARP doesn't miss a beat. The bigger news was the next day they came out in support of President Obama's health care reform initiative.
But remember the order from their lips to our listeners' ears, then to the president. By the way, Margaret, when are we going to have the president on our show?
Not to worry. I'll be sure and let you know. And I am working on it.
Speaking of guests who have had the president's ear, today we're going to hear from Congressman Joseph Gao, who spent a lot of time this weekend talking with the president, as he was the lone Republican who voted for the Affordable Health Care for America Act.
It was a memorable moment on Saturday night watching on C-SPAN when that one lone Republican I vote went up on the scorecards. It was really a courageous act by the congressman, and he's an amazing individual, and we're looking to learning more about him today.
We'll hear a little bit about his remarkable journey from being born in Vietnam to becoming congressman for the district that represents New Orleans.
We're also going to hear excerpts from the floor of the House of Representatives. It was a night when the voice of the people really put some wind into the sail of health reform, and we're going to bring that to you today.
What an amazing event. I know I was on my Facebook sharing the news as I listened on the iPhone to this historic event.
And knowing that you're a TV-free household, I was busy emailing you trying to say, get the kids to a television so they can watch this historic event.
We did stay connected.
And speaking of trying to stay connected, let's hear from a listener last week who commented on our greenhouse project. Terry Danaher wrote in, I really enjoyed today's program. I know the show's been geared toward policymakers, but today's information hit home for me. I'm beginning to think about living situations in my elder years, and it was comforting to know that there are situations being developed that challenge that traditional convalescent home.
Thanks, Terry. It hit home for a lot of us who were thinking about better ways to care for the aging of an American population.
And just a reminder to those who can't listen to the entire show, we've added a website. It can be found at chcradio.com. Click to hear all of our shows and get transcripts as well.
And if you want to give us some feedback on our show, email us at conversations@chc1.com. Now let's get an update on healthcare headlines.
In this week's headline news, when H.R. 3962 reached the threshold of 218 votes on Saturday night, a cheer went up and Congress was ready to move on to the next battle in this year's campaign for significant health reform. The all-members present, all-galley seats filled on Saturday night was testimony to the historic nature of the House vote. As the week began, the Democrats were on the offensive. Former President Bill Clinton addressed Democrats in the Senate at their weekly caucus meeting to tell them they must pass health care legislation as soon as possible to salvage the economy. He said, "Health care reform is an economic imperative." Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is waiting to get a cost estimate for his health care bill from the Congressional Budget Office before publicly unveiling it. He may bring the bill to the floor as early as next week. While the Senate has yet to even see the bill it will debate, Democrats are already concerned the debate will be held up by issues like the inclusion of a public option, as well as abortion language in the bill. The Stupak Amendment that was passed by the House Saturday night prohibited the use of federal funds for abortion, and it was critical to H.R. 3962's passage. Senator Ben Nelson of Nebraska made it clear that the Senate health reform bill will face the same challenge, and he said, "If it doesn't make clear that it does not fund abortion with government money, you can be sure I will vote against the bill."
This week's Newsmaker interview is with Congressman Joseph Gao, who represents the 2nd Congressional District in Louisiana. But first, here's a background report on Congressman Gao.
When Congressman Joseph Gao cast his electronic I vote for H.R. 3962 late Saturday night, he suddenly went from relative unknown to perhaps the most talked about Republican in America. Unlike Senator Olympia Snowe of Maine, who's kept both parties guessing about her final decisions on the Senate health reform bill, Congressman Gao had not stated publicly that he would be voting in favor of the bill. On Saturday night, after the House passed the amendment prohibiting federal support for abortion under the public option, and after his party leaders had given rousing condemnations of the bill, he cast his aye vote. He had been clear that public funding for abortion would guarantee his no vote, saying, "I have to live with myself." Now 42 years old, he was born at the height of the Vietnam War, 1967, in Saigon, now Ho Chi Minh City. That makes him the first Vietnamese-born Vietnamese-American to serve in the House of Representatives. His first foray into politics weren't successful. He lost a run for a Louisiana House of Representatives seat, but later was appointed by Governor Jindal to a seat on the Orleans Parish Board of Election Supervisors. Clearly, Hurricane Katrina was a pivotal experience for him. In the period after Katrina, he became an activist on behalf of the victims of Katrina, often going head-to-head with the FEMA office in New Orleans. When he got to Congress, he quickly grabbed headlines announcing that his staff was investigating the FEMA office and accusing them of widespread discrimination, cronyism, and nepotism. When he was elected in 2008 to represent Louisiana's 2nd District, he was the first Republican to represent that heavily Democratic district in over 100 years. He defeated 9-term Democrat William Anderson, who was under an indictment during the campaign. In Congress, his committee assignments are Homeland Security and Transportation and Infrastructure. While others in Congress have come from poor backgrounds and made their own fortunes in the world, Congressman Gao is cited as one of the poorest members of Congress. Congressman Gao came to the United States as an 8-year-old refugee. His father, an officer in the South Vietnamese Army, was a prisoner of war who ultimately rejoined his family in America years later. Gao's family settled in Houston, and Congressman Gao went on to distinguish himself academically with degrees in physics, law, and philosophy. He's a devout Catholic who spent several years as a Jesuit seminarian before deciding that the priesthood was not his vocation. And although he distinguished himself as an advocate for people with his work on immigration issues, particularly the boat people of Vietnam, it was Hurricane Katrina that seems to have given him the spark for his political ambitions. In his first months as a congressman, he was greeted warmly by the Republican leadership. House Minority Leader John Bonner reportedly wrote a memo, "The future is Gao." But that was all before Gao's Saturday night vote, which wasn't so significant in terms of outcome. The Democrats already had 218 votes needed to assure victory, but for what it represented, the sole Republican vote on an issue for which House Republican leaders had said earlier that day, not a single Republican will vote for this bill. So why did he do it? Well, perhaps it was a combination of voting his conscience, representing the will of his constituents, and practical politics. There was no shortage of opinion on this following his vote. Congressman Gao represents an extremely Democratic district that went all out for President Obama in 2008. Voting against the president's agenda would have made for a tough re-election in his district next year. The Economist points to the changing nature of Vietnamese-American politics as another reason, saying a candidate has to appeal to the other minority groups as well, Latino or African-American, within their districts. The Huffington Post said President Obama basically bought him off by promising to address problems in Gao's district. And The Hill's Molly Hooper reports that Gao waited to cast his vote until the moment when it no longer mattered how he voted, making it just symbolic. Whatever the reason, it looks like it came as a surprise to the Republican leadership and is likely to make him one of the most watched members of Congress and perhaps the most analyzed Louisiana politician since Huey Long for some time.
Joining us by phone is Congressman Joseph Gao, who represents the 2nd Congressional District in Louisiana. Congressman, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Welcome, Congressman. Now, you were the only Republican to vote for the H.R. 3962, an act to provide affordable quality health care for all Americans. That took some courage. You've said it was the right thing for your constituents. Tell us a little bit about what you mean by that.
My district in the southern part of Louisiana, which comprises mainly of New Orleans and the surrounding areas, is a very poor area with a lot of people who are uninsured, and I believe that we need to provide health care insurance for them, and this bill, I believe, would be able to do that. Along with that, I thought the prohibitions against the pre-existing exclusions and other provisions in the bill were, or at least will be, very beneficial for the people down here.
Mm-hmm. Congressman, you held many town meetings with your constituents to talk about health care reform. Tell us what you heard from them.
Mainly, people convey the desire to have health care reform. Obviously, there were a number of people who were angry and afraid, and rightly so, because it's a very complex bill. But overall, I would have to say between 60 and 70 people wanted health care reform, and I informed them that I was leaning towards supporting it as long as we fixed the abortion language on the bill. And I was able to push that along with the Conference of Catholic Bishops and other pro-life members of the U.S. Congress to push for pro-life language on the bill. And once that was successful, I was able to support the health care reform bill.
Mm-hmm. And Congressman, you've had the opportunity to talk with President Obama. Tell us how receptive he's been to the concerns that you've asked him to consider about the needs of your district and your constituents.
The administration and I, we have had a very strong working relationship, and we have worked well together in the past 9 months to address many issues of recovery. For example, just in FEMA alone, we have been able to push out over $1 billion in recovery money. So I was talking to the president to encourage him to continue working with him in the areas of recovery. I expressed specifically the needs of Louisiana with the FMAP fix, with the situations concerning Charity and Methodist, as well as the issue of community disaster loans. So he's fully aware of those issues that are of priority for us down here.
The president has said he wants a bipartisan bill, but so far all he has on the Republican side is yourself and Senator Snow. Do you have any advice for the president on ways to further bipartisanship on this all-important health reform bill?
I believe that the administration has to encourage the Democratic leadership to involve more Republican members in the discussions, in the debate. We have been pretty much shut out of the conversation, and I hope that the administration will encourage the Democratic leadership to engage the Republicans into the conversation.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. We're speaking with Congressman Joseph Gao, who represents the 2nd Congressional District in Louisiana. Congressman Gao was the lone Republican vote as the House of Representatives took a historic step forward in passing healthcare legislation.
And, you know, I think one thing that everybody does agree on is that H.R. 3962, to provide affordable quality health care for all Americans, is a long bill, about 2,000 pages. And that's not really surprising. It covers a lot of territory. But we'd be interested in hearing what elements of the legislation stand out for you as the most important.
I thought it was important that we have the individual mandate requiring everyone to have health care. I believe that. We as a country have to provide health care for our people, and for those that cannot afford it, we should be able to help them to subsidize some of the expenses. I believe that the provision preventing pre-existing exclusion was an important provision, because mm-hmm. oftentimes many insurance companies try to not provide coverage for people who are sick, or at least not pay for some of the existing conditions, or make it extremely expensive for them to do so. So that, I believe that provision was also very important. Mm-hmm. And then the provision, for example, allowing or at least providing incentives for people to go into the medical field, because eventually we will need more medical providers, doctors, nurses, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Those incentives were extremely important. So there are good things in the bill, as well as there are some things that concern me. But overall, I thought I needed to support the bill.
Mm-hmm. Congressman, you were born in Vietnam in Saigon, now known as Ho Chi Minh City. You've had a remarkable journey from there to representing the 2nd Congressional District, which encompasses the city of New Orleans. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your life journey?
Yes, I came over from Vietnam when I was 8 years old with an older sister and a younger brother. I was eventually raised by an uncle. My father was a military officer. He was in prison after the Vietnam War for about 7 years in the re-education camps. My mother stayed back in Vietnam to raise five of my sisters. I spent the first 4 years of my life in Goshen, Indiana, and then moved down to Mississippi for 1 year, and then grew up spending my middle school and high school years in Houston. I went to college afterwards joined the Society of Jesus to become a Catholic priest. Didn't quite make it there. Spent 6 years in the society in which I received my motivation to enter the religious life. Afterwards, I left the Society of Jesus in 1996, went to Virginia for a year to teach middle school, went to Capitol Hill to lobby for refugee issues, went to law school, got my own law practice, got married, have a family, and decided to run for Congress.
And you're still very young. You've done a lot.
I am already 42, even though for the last couple of days I feel like 70.
Well, congratulations on all of that. And as you say, you are a first-term congressman, and certainly casting such a major and dissenting vote from your party, that's difficult at any phase. You've got some good precedents in history, congressmen and women from both sides who went against the party vote but maintained successful careers in the House or the Senate. What interests you most in government and in governing? What are the key issues in addition to health care that you're tracking?
The main issues in healthcare, obviously, we down here, we need tremendous help with respect to charity and Methodist. But overall, I believe that as a congressional member, as well as being a representative of this district, I hope to continue to be able to do great service to this area, to bring the necessary federal fundings to help rebuild this area. That has been my main focus when I came to office 9 months ago, and it will continue to be my main focus for the future. So I hope to get to be able to give my contributions to the people of the second district, and hope that I will continue to represent them well.
Congressman, the images of Katrina are seared in our minds. We've all read about the experiences of doctors and nurses and patients at Charity Hospital, and also how much of the healthcare workforce and infrastructure was lost and may not fully return. Can you share with us your attitude towards healthcare and the needs for health reform and how that was shaped by the Katrina experience?
After Katrina, obviously, the charity system down here was destroyed. The hospitals down here were pretty much overextended. There's a lack of community health centers. There is a lack of medical doctors, medical nurses. This particular bill will provide incentives for medical homes, more community-based medical clinics, which I believe should move towards the future, because oftentimes people show up in our emergency rooms and essentially making medical care much more expensive than if they were to go to the community medical clinics to get minor issues addressed. So I believe that the healthcare reform debate, at least this healthcare reform bill, will provide incentives for medical homes, for community medical clinics, for more medical providers to provide people with access to medical care, because after Katrina, many people of my district did not have access to medical care. And I believe that this bill will provide at least a pathway to get that done.
Congressman Gao, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you very much.
We just heard from Congressman Gao, the most talked about politician since he broke with his party and voted with the Democrats on Saturday night for health care reform.
There were strong and eloquent voices both for and against the bill on Saturday night. We're going to hear some of those voices, and let's start with the Republicans. We'll hear from Minority Leader John Bonner of Ohio and then Minority Whip Eric Cantor of Virginia.
I rise in opposition to this bill. One of the issues in this bill that is of concern to members on both sides of the aisle has to do with the sanctity of life.
There are times in this body when we really can tell the difference between us Republicans and you Democrats, and this is certainly one of them. The Democrats' solution is a 1,990-page, trillion-dollar overhaul of the healthcare system we know. A sweeping new entitlement that raises taxes, cuts benefits to seniors, and spends over $1 trillion that we don't have.
The Republicans certainly had passion in their rhetoric, but their health proposal was ill-conceived, as we hear from Representative John Dingell, who struck the gavel in the House when it approved Medicare in 1965.
I won't begin by spending much time on the bill offered by my Republican colleagues. It is really no substitute for H.R. 3962. According to the New York Times, and I think this sufficiently disposes of the matter, the Republican amendment does almost nothing to reduce the scandalously high number of Americans who have no insurance. And it makes only a token stab at slowing the relentlessly rising costs of medical care. Interestingly enough, under the Republican amendment, individuals would pay up to $2,821 more, and families would pay $8,188 more under the Republican plan when compared with H.R. 3962. It's not in the public interest that we should do that. The first is what was the problem when my dad introduced the first legislation in 1943. That there are now some 47 million Americans without health care. This will give many of them adequate health care and a decent choice of what they will have before them at the best possible price through an exchange which will make it possible for them to choose without having to worry about understanding the language of Philadelphia lawyers and reading fine print that can only be read with a magnifying glass. Today is maybe a tough vote, but it was in 1935 when we passed Social Security. I hear my colleagues tell us that the economy, jobs, and the financial system overhaul are desperately needed. True, but that was the case in 35 when we passed the Social Security Act.
Representative John Dingell really gave us that historical perspective. And now, the last two speakers before the vote was taken, Majority Leader Steny Hoyer and Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
Because I want to say to every American facing down illness, never again will you be denied coverage because you have diabetes or asthma or some other disease, or because you're pregnant, or because you have anything else your insurer decides is a pre-existing condition. Never again will your coverage run out, nor will you find that coverage you thought you paid for was actually not there at all. And never again can insurance companies drive out competition and set premiums as high as they like, because there will be a public insurance option and a transparent marketplace to keep them honest, to keep them competitive, to bring prices down.
There's a cap on what you pay in, but there is no cap on the benefits that you receive. It works for seniors, closing the donut hole, offering better primary care, and strengthening Medicare for years to come. It works for women, preventing insurance companies from charging women more than men for the same coverage. No longer will women, being a woman, be a pre-existing medical condition.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week, Bright Ideas looks at dance and the powerful connection between dance, community, and health. Throughout the ages, dance has been a pleasurable and an important community event, whether around the tribal fire, in an outdoor meadow, or in a formal ballroom. In England, the Community Dance Foundation puts dance at the forefront of its health and well-being initiative. Recognizing the benefit of dance, dance artists and practitioners work across the health sector in key ways, managing illness, health education, and community development. In fact, the National Health Services has key initiatives underway at looking at ways dance can prevent falls in the elderly, tackle obesity, and reduce heart disease. The Foundation for Community Dance has a vision statement, a world where dance is part of everyone's life, and engagement with dance part of every community. In our own community, we have seen the power of dance in getting people out of their houses, off their couches, and into smoke and alcohol-free environments where they can boogie the night away. We call it Vinny's Jump and Jive, and it's right here on Main Street, Middletown.
Whether it's salsa, swing, tango, or hip-hop, it's fun, it's healthy, and you cannot help but engage with some new people. And for the kids, Vinny has a program to bring community dance teachers into the school, Recess Rocks. For more ideas on starting your own dance, go to communitydance.org.uk or to vinnysjumpandjive.com. Fun, active, engaging, community dance. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.